Welcome to Flip Table Theology, a weekly conversation centered around flipping tables of oppression, injustice, privilege, division, and religion as acts of faith and worship.
We are so excited you guys are joining us at this table. Grab a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and let's dive in.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Flip Table Theology. We are recording virtually today, which is the first time that we've done this. I'm surprised we've gotten this far without having to do a virtual recording already, but I am currently in quarantine for COVID again and still testing positive. And so we wanted to be as safe as possible and still capture an important conversation, especially in light of recent announcements and things. So we wanted to gather today. We've got myself and Holly, Rue, and Sharita with us, and just processing the announcement that I personally made yesterday on Facebook that I am stepping away from the Connecting Grounds effective the end of February, and that Rue is actually going to be transitioning to our new lead pastor, which we're so excited about. I just wanted to kind of maybe share a little bit in that space with you guys personally, process some of our own feelings about that, kind of talk about change and just how that's hard for everyone. I have a feeling we'll weave in some conversation about self-care and probably some conversation just about transitions in general, how to handle these things as leaders, what that looks like in healthy church spaces, and how to make sure that that's not a source of trauma. So I think those are kind of some of the things I hope we get a chance to talk about. So Rue, I'm going to start with you. How are you feeling? You and I've been talking about this transition.
Oh my goodness.
And the possibility of it for well over a year.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about how you're feeling now that it's public and out.
Oh man. I have a lot of mixed emotions, a lot of complex emotions. But I think one of the things that I am feeling in all of that is just like a deep sense of gratitude for this space, and honored, and also a little insecure, and feeling like this is a huge space to step into, because you've done so much, Christy, and you've built this culture that is so unique and transformative. And I am blessed, but also shocked to be in that space and be stepping into that role as a leader here. And I'm also know that there's not any other place I'd rather be. I have always loved the Connecting Grounds and believe that the work that we do goes beyond who's leading it. And I'm also, you know, grieving too, that transition of your leadership, and that although you are still going to be here relationally, it's a change and it's hard. It's just a lot of feelings, yeah. A lot of feelings around this.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that's really important for us to share and to talk about is the fact that, you know, when we planted the Connecting Grounds and started that process back in 2018, you know, really kind of our core planting team, which Holly, you and Scott were a part of, like we had conversations early on from the very beginning days of saying, like, it's really important that this not be built around one person, one voice, one personality, that we are building something to eventually give away. And we're building something that will sustain and outlast us and outlove us in so many capacities. And so You know, I think it's important to acknowledge that that was kind of always our heart from the very beginning, was recognizing, and I said this in my statement, like that I know I walk with a duality of call. I have this passion for the local church, and it's been an incredible adventure and journey and experience to have the opportunity to plant the Connecting Grounds and to watch it grow into something that we could have never, ever fathomed or imagined when we first opened our doors on Commercial Street. But being able to understand that, like, the goal was never about self-gratification. It was never about elevating, you know, my voice or elevating, you know, ourselves and trying to build this big mega church movement. It was about trying to lay a foundation for community and leadership development and meeting the needs and building relationships. And so I think, Rue, when you and I first started talking and you kind of shared, you know, hey, I think I may be feeling called into ministry work that is similar, and we started having conversations, I knew very, very early that you were the person to lead TCG into the next chapter. And so I think that privilege of also getting to, like, mentor and name that. Now, our timeline got accelerated quickly because of some conditions that I'm dealing with that we're not going to talk a lot about. But we had a pretty significantly long transition plan put in place that got rapidly accelerated, and you've been incredibly adaptable in that. But Holly, talk a little bit about that, because you were a part of those early conversations and kind of that idea of building something that we were a part of building, but also recognizing we're not building just for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think that part of that conversation that I resonate so much with personally, and that I wish more people grasped in their own world, is this piece of, like, when we step into something, when we build something, when we are a part of growing something, whatever that looks like, we are not stunted where we started. And, like, our own growth, our own becoming, our own changing, because change is a part of our identity as humans and in our journeys. Like, there's something really beautiful and poetic about that, that, like, nothing should look the same that it did the day it started. And the hope, the help of any organization, any church, any, you know, anything that we create, is that it only gets better, that it grows, that it becomes healthier, it becomes stronger. And part of that shift is leadership shifts, it's voice shifts, it's belief changes. Those things should be normalized. And I think in our culture, we have this safety that is, we are this perspective where safety equals consistency, and that consistency is like a lack of change, instead of recognizing that change is just part of it, and change is important, and it's a very important, I mean, it's survival. Like, you have to be able to change to survive, and that's a very animal-like behavior. That's a very tree plant-like behavior. Like, you adapt to where your environment, but it's not just adapting, it's changing so you can thrive. And so I name that to say, like, as an organization, I think we had a little bit of a scope of that perspective, and a lot of it came from that place of, like, we just don't want it to be centered around our voices and our perspectives. But I think a lot of it too is, like, grown in us to recognize, but we've also grown and changed. And, like, Rue, Sharita, all of us came on at different stages of TCG. And it's unique we do this podcast together, because that's kind of been a place where we've all gotten this community sense. But as, you know, even those things may change and are changing, like, that's a celebratory thing. That's something that should be celebrated. And so for me, I think I have a really big sense of pride in just the fact that there is this okayness with, like, that transition, and okayness of the shift, and an honoring of all the places of emotion that brings in, the grief and stuff like that. But yeah, I think I say that both for us as TCG, but also, like, I hope somebody's listening to this that's feeling a sense of, I just needed that validation that, like, I'm allowed to grow, or that, like, my growing, my becoming is something that is beautiful and something that should be expected.
How about you, Sharita? What are some of your thoughts?
First of all, I just want to say that it's been a privilege to be a part of this growing community. And I have admired everything that this church and its leadership has stood for from the very beginning, and it's changed over time. I remember in my early days talking with Christy and having questions about certainty, but also having questions about what it meant to be a part of a church body or church community, and having some struggles with how the local church plays that out. It feels kind of clubby, feels kind of fraternity, sorority-ish. And I have always struggled with the idea that you can only be a part of one body in these local spaces. I also just value all the things that I've learned from everyone on this team. But, Holly brings up a lot of things often about nature. And I've always seen Christy as a planter. And one who sows a lot of seeds and has a big vision for a great bounty, but also recognizing the need for other laborers to come alongside and nurture this, massive garden that has been, planted. And I have come to find beauty and comfort in the idea that we should all be working on this big garden together. And it's never, ever been healthy for one person to take it on alone. And I'm grateful for the time that all of us who have had the opportunity to work alongside of you have had the pleasure of seeing your vision for things, because I do believe that God gave you a vision for this church plant and the work that this community is able to do in Springfield and beyond. And we've learned a lot, and I hope that we all continue that work.
I think you say something really important too, Sherita, that I want to kind of pick up on from a leadership perspective. When you talk about that feeling of like only being able to be involved in one community, I do think that American Christianity has like a really strong loyalty factor to it that oftentimes comes across as almost competitive, or not almost, overtly competitive. And it becomes very much kind of this us versus you mentality when it comes to like our church, your church, that church. One of the things that I think I have learned over the last 5 years of leading and planting and leading in a very heavily religious community with a lot of churches, is I had to really like, cause I was raised in that mindset, right? Of like that loyalty factor. But one of the things that became really abundantly clear very, very early was that model was never going to be the model of TCG. Mm. That the Connecting Grounds really kind of has become this thing that's not a destination to come to, but it's kind of like, it becomes the journey for some people. And for some people, it's very short-lived, and that journey is very, very short. For others, it becomes a much longer experience on that journey. And we see that in so many ways. We've seen that in leaders. We've seen that in people who've come and done their internships with us. We've seen that in people who've come for outreach services that we've built a relationship with, and then they went on to do other things. And so I think one of the greatest lessons I think that I've learned from leading and pastoring at the Connecting Grounds is like the beauty of an open-handed posture.
I love and it.
Recognizing the importance of like, people are not commodities, right? And people are not meant to be controlled or manipulated in any way. And so often I think that's what happens in faith spaces. that people come into our life for a season, whatever season that looks like, and learning to steward that and learning to see that as a privilege of however long you are in my life and you are part of TCG's story, I want to honor that and I want to invest in that time, but I also want to like release that and never make you feel guilty when your season is done. And
absolutely.
I use the picture in my resignation announcement of a gift that Holly made me for my ordination. And it was the letters TCG. And Holly had gone through and had written hundreds and hundreds of names of people who have been a part of the TCG story over the last 5 years. And it was just such a beautiful gift to read those names. And some of them, you know, I immediately had memories that popped up. And some of them have been people that have been in our life since day one. Some of them were only there for a few weeks or a month. But recognizing, we talk so much about seasonal living. I think it's also important to talk about seasonal leadership and seasonal church affiliation and seasonal investment of our time and energy for the seasons that we're called.
I would add too, just this connection between seasonal and like where we place our value and our worth as leaders and as people, and how often careers become identities, and not even just careers, but like a career at a specific location or a career with a specific role and title. And it grieves me that like there's probably so many people in this world who will never entertain the idea of leaving or moving into something because their entire value is wrapped up into this role. And I think especially in fields like, you know, pastoring and like caretaker roles, people who have jobs where they work with people and they work with people who are experiencing high need, like that value gets so warped into this, like, I can't leave, like I'm needed. And there's value in the what am I doing to help? How am I caring for people? Instead of tapping into that seasonal aspect of I brought something to this. I have, you know, built, I have grown, I have sowed, like I have changed in that and people have changed through this, but it is okay to move into something that there's a space of that. And like my values in me as a human and my values, the fact that I'm alive and I'm breathing and not in what I do and what I'm called.
Go ahead.
And I can really kind of identify with that personally. I know that, especially during like our COVID crisis response, I really started to kind of feel that pressure that you're talking about, Holly, in a way that I knew was becoming unhealthy, like this very unhealthy dependency, on like who I was and what I was doing and like that activity level that just started to feel really, really hard to sustain. And so, you know, one of the things that I started to do a year and a half ago, was like, what are some different ways that we can create things or build things that allow some of those things to be decentered from myself. So like things like we built the Shelter SGF app and like trying to put all of those resources and all of that content into a different space so that it was shared in a more collaborative way. You know, we built the TCG partnership network, trying to really kind of bring a whole bunch of amazing nonprofits and businesses and ecumenical partners together to talk about those things because, you know, in that particular season, it was easy for things to become focused around our activity because there was a season where we were the only ones doing activity. But coming out of that, it was really important that we tried to recenter and rebalance that. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
Two things that I wanted to mention earlier about kind of this idea that we were previously discussing. One is that I've been watching in reading about cults. I've always been interested and fascinated with the idea of cults. And one of the things that I've read and heard consistently is that that these cult leaders often present
community as if it's a part of discipleship, but really what it is manipulation and ownership. And I think that's important to name in these transitions, is that we recognize that people, like you said, Christy, are not commodities, and that we don't own individuals, and that, you know, people will come and go, and that is okay. And to normalize that, I think that's something even hard, something that a paradigm shift that I've had to make in being a part of this community, is that, you know, this idea that healthiness means that you stay forever. And that's really not the case with regards to this community that we've built, whether it's, you know, leadership or membership or whatever your role has been. Everything is season. The Bible even talks about to everything there's a season, and it does not have to always be this idea of permanency. And the second thing that I think that I've learned in this season is even the work that we do cannot be done singularly. It also requires a larger lens. It requires that we're not the only ones taking on an effort. You know, so this whole idea about this membership in these singular churches and these silos, and it's us and them, none of that is ever going to get the work done that needs to be done in our world, in our communities, if we continue to function in these silos of us having this role and us, and everybody can have a lane, but at the end of the day, we have to work together to accomplish our goals. And the people who are a part of our community, they can serve in your community and that community and another community, because at the end of the day, if we have a shared vision and a shared goal, the job gets done.
I mean, absolutely. I think one of the mantras we've always talked about in leadership and healthy leadership is that leadership is healthiest when it's not done alone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's healthiest when it's done in community and in collaboration and in partnerships, because there's accountability in that. There's, you know, shared burden in that. There's, you know, kind of a centralizing a passion that when I'm feeling burnt out, somebody else can breathe that into me. And so I think that's important for everyone to be mindful of, no matter what you're doing, building, leading in, that nobody should be leading alone. That was never designed to be a solo venture.
Yeah. I think one of the things I think of in this conversation is a motto that we said in the social service world a lot when I was a caseworker, which is you're supposed to work yourself out of a job, which I 100% believe in. But in addition to that, I would like to add, you have to create systems that breed and produce people that where you're not, the job isn't always there. And I think whenever, like what you're saying, Sherita, with whenever you're creating a collaborative support system of people who are doing that work, and it's not just on one person, that's whenever it becomes this beautiful community and effort. And you get to rest whenever you need it.
Yeah. I think something too I really appreciate about your leadership, Christy, has always been this like courage of being willing to dive in and do the hard, dirty work, like being at the forefront of the caring and literally the, you know, the feeding and the tending to wounds and the, you know, and TCG's case, like going out in the middle of the winter and checking people on the coldest of nights to make sure that they're okay. And those tasks were never you were never too high for them ever at once in your leadership. Like, in fact, you led the charge into those spaces, but there's also been this very simultaneous space of saying, but I am not creating a codependency with people that I'm the only one that's there doing it. I'm the only one that when you show up, that I will be the one to listen or to provide or to support or to champion and cheer. And I think there's something just walking very adjacent with you in this transition, seeing a lot of messages that people have been sending that are very much this, like, well, I'm going to check on, you know, this group of people, or I'm, you know, I'm in this space on this day. Like, I will continue to be in that space. And, you know, hey, at our church or our organization, we're doing this during this week. So I'll make sure that, and it's just been very much this like holistic care piece that I think is really beautiful and a really big testament to just that partnership mindset that you led a lot of the charge in early on, which is like, we have to learn how to do this together so that these people that call this city home value that there are it's not just one person in one church that sees them, but that there's a whole community that sees them and loves them. And I think that should be the legacy of any organization, any church, any leader is I'm willing to do the work to earn your trust and love you, but I want to make sure that you're connected to others, not just myself. And that's something that I'm very inspired by your leadership.
I'll be honest, like, I think that's also an area that's been really, really hard for me this particular season. And that there's still a lot of grief. Like, I have a lot of excitement about the next season of my leadership. I have a lot of excitement about the next season of the Connecting Grounds under Rue's leadership. But there is a lot of grief over kind of having some of those things that I love and I value of being on the front lines kind of taken away really abruptly, without having a chance to have as much participation or closure as I probably would have liked. I'm a big believer in the concept of like finishing strong and finishing well. This is something I talk about in a lot of spaces. I can't tell you the number of times I've said that to my children, like, you know, how you finish is just as important as how you start. And I have definitely not gotten to finish maybe in the ways that I had hoped I would. Some of the health challenges that I've been dealing with, like make outreach and being at the center and being on street outreach, a lot more difficult than it used to be. And so I've been insanely grateful for those that have been willing to step up, and that because we've had such an amazing pool of volunteers and staff and people that are there, the work itself has not suffered, which is a beautiful gift. But it has been hard to not be able to engage in that the way that I always love to do. So,
yeah, I'd like to just touch on the challenge and the expectations surrounding transition. Particularly as a very strong leadership exits and then there is new leadership starting, that we hold space for the new leader to develop their own systems and structures, and that we create support for new. And new is hard, even with an old leader, one who's been around, change is hard, but adding in a transition to a new leader and changing structures and systems and any other thing that goes along with that change, style even, is rough. And so I'd like to just speak into this idea that as a community, we support a transition and give space for change and differences. You know, and just allow for that to happen and support it as best as possible. I don't know what else to say, but other than that.
Yeah. I feel like one of the things, I'm holding a lot right now, is that the two calls of like knowing that there's such a relationship with people that people have with you, Christy, and the love and support that they felt, and knowing that that's something that I can't replace and shouldn't really. And that's not my role here. I know that's something that I've also had to process and try to learn that this isn't, I'm not the new Christy. I am Rue, and I come with my own strengths and my own weaknesses, but, what I do carry into that space is that same heart and commitment of making sure that the people that we love and serve feel loved and served, and that there's still that advocacy piece, but an advocacy that shifts to more of a like that sustainability piece, where we are here and we're going to get really good at what TCG is good at. And I know that I'm just holding the emotion of a lot of people in this space, especially our people on the streets, and don't want to ever have them feel like I'm trying to replace you, because that's not what I'm here to do. And just, I know there's that piece when it comes to this transition of new support, of honoring that tension, but also making sure that people still feel like this isn't, the work that we're doing is not going to stop.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Well,
and I think that that's a really good word, Sherita, for anybody that is in leadership that is tasked with any kind of mentoring. Like, mm-hmm. your job is not to create a carbon copy of yourself. Mm-hmm. Your job is to help those who will come after you find their own voice and find their own skills and find their strengths and learn how to compensate for skills that maybe they haven't had the opportunity to develop as much yet. And I think anytime that we're in an organization where there is an expectation of copy paste, like that it's going to be exactly the same, not only do we set the leadership up for failure, we also set the community and the organization up for failure, because organizations may be built of structures and systems, but those structures and systems are ran by people. And mm-hmm. so we have to remember that there is always a human element to leadership, mm-hmm. to organizations, to church ministry, to outreach work. And we can never dehumanize that leader from their own personality. And so, Rue, mm-hmm. I am so incredibly excited, because I think in so many ways you have some strengths that complement places where I know I've not been as strong. And you and I have very different personalities. We have very different communication approaches. And in a lot of ways, I think that those complement each other. So 100%, when we say and we stress that the outreach work of TCG is mm-hmm. not change, that like those programs are solid and they are going to be there mm-hmm. to help people for a long time to come. That is very true. But the voices that you hear, mm-hmm. words that are used, they may be a little bit different. And, mm-hmm. you know, the way and the approaches that things are done may be a little bit different. That doesn't make them wrong. And mm-hmm. I am so incredibly excited to watch you personalize your pastoral journey and you to personalize the next chapter of TCG, and mm-hmm. and knowing that I'll be here to cheer you on and to support you and to have lots of lunches and venting sessions and strategy sessions, but at the same time, never with the heart of saying you're not doing this the way I would do this, mm-hmm. because again, back to that open-handed leadership piece, like mm-hmm. I'm excited to just watch you soar and find your wings and find your voice. And I celebrate that no matter what that's going to look like.
Mm-hmm. You're here.
Yeah. And I think there's that, I've felt that in every aspect of this, this mentorship, and that open-handedness is really scary at first. And I know, especially when you're not used to it, and there's this level of internal knowing that I think has to come whenever you're working, you're leading in a way with an open hand, because you're having that person look inside and see where their strengths are, what their passions are, what motivates them. And that can be very scary for that person if they haven't experienced it first. So I say that for myself. Yeah. And then I also say it for people that are being led in that way, and hopefully will be led in that way if they haven't been.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Well, it is kind of a surreal feeling today. I think we're right about the 24-hour mark of things being more public as we're having this conversation. So I know there's been a lot to process. There's been just a lot of really beautiful messages from people that I've just been very, very deeply touched by. A lot of, you know, voices of care and concern, which I appreciate deeply. I continue to just say, like, I'm okay and I'm going to be okay, but to be okay is going to require some work and some time for right now. I know Sherita's making a face at me. I know I have not taken good care of myself in this season. And I take some of those lessons into new adventures and new leadership in the future of having to do a better job of finding balance. And so I just also speak that to other leaders that may be listening. Self-care is important, and not doing it has consequences in a lot of different ways. It can have relational consequences. It can have emotional consequences. And right now for me, it's got some pretty significant physical consequences. So, yeah. I challenge that. I know we had that conversation last week as part of our conversation on toxic achievement, which also stepped on my toes. And now, you know, maybe a little bit more why. But I just want to say, I'm grateful for the accountability of each of you as my friends, Sharita especially, because there have been a lot of hard conversations and love over the last few years of just remembering.
For everybody on this Zoom, I mean, here's the thing, Christy, that I will say. I've been a very public and private vocal person about self-care for all of us leaders in the community, including myself. But we have to model these behaviors for ourselves and for others around us. Of self-care, because we do stand in places where people see how we lead and how we care for ourselves. And when we don't, it becomes a model of what's to be done. And it does have major health consequences, as I know as well. And so we got to support each other in that. So yes, I've been vocal about it, and I will continue to be vocal about it. And I want you guys to hold me accountable too, because I was always preaching to the choir. I always recognize that I'm a part of this, the problem also, and we have to do better.
Yeah.
And I put we in there. And I'm looking at Holly too, and Rue.
I think one of the things I think of, especially leading from a place of trying to implement self-care, is when you're working with people, especially in the work that we do and just any sort of public platform, and you're trying to get them out of survival mode. It is incredibly hard to get someone out of survival mode if you're in survival mode yourself. And that nervous system, can break down your whole system really, really quickly. And it's so hard to do, is to get yourself balanced and grounded.
So hard.
It's so hard. As important as it is to get an organization balanced and grounded and thriving, so it is the person who's leading it.
Yeah, I would say I've had some very eye-opening, and I would say, like, in myself, I think my self-care journey looks radically different than it did a year or so ago. And part of that has been, you know, I look at the way that I care for my children and the way that I teach them to communicate for themselves, and so much of it is driven by this motivation of, like, learn teaching them how to communicate what they need and teaching them that they are deserving of things that meet their needs, and wanting to teach them that, like, the ways that you meet your needs too, like, you're hungry and you want a snack, and also trying to expose them to the things that actually nourish their bodies versus, you know, their affinity for chicken nuggets and popsicles. We won't talk about how many popsicles my 4-year-old eats a day. But, like, those pieces of, like, if you're tired, take a nap. If you're thirsty, have some water. Mm-hmm. If you're feeling overstimulated, take a break. And, like, having seen, especially my daughter, my 6-year-old, who is so very skilled at being able to communicate what she needs and when she needs it, and some of those pieces. And I think that has been very eye-opening to myself in my own world, because it's like, but I deny myself that all the time. We as a population, we deny ourselves things that meet our basic needs, because we are driven by these pieces of, like, accomplishment and achievement and
freaking capitalism.
Capitalism, yeah. And, like, there's just so much of that that has, like, catered to this horrific self-care world. And in the name of capitalism, it's also like, well, in order to actually properly self-care, you have to have the money to, like, invest in a spa or these routine, like, workout routines and things like that, when the reality is that's not at all what that should look like. And so I speak that even just, like, as we are raising up a younger generation, trying to advocate for them to be willing to meet their own needs, to communicate what they are. We set that example. And I think that has challenged me a lot as a leader. And I think we've all together, the four of us especially, have been on a journey of just being better caregivers of ourselves. And so I'm really proud of us for that. I'm really proud of you in that, Christy, for that level of advocacy and leadership you've taken from the complete opposite of where you started with, you know, I want to care for the world, to like, I do have to care for myself, and I have to care for myself in a way that actually, you know, that I actually listen to my body and I actually respond, instead of feeling the guilt, to continue to work in a way that isn't healthy.
Good stuff. Good stuff. We do have things to share about, but today's not the day for that. There will be, you know, new things to come in the future. And we'll probably talk more about those in the months to come. So I'm excited for some opportunities to engage in additional work. I'm excited about opportunities to use a lot of our experience at the Connecting Grounds to do additional things, and grow and support and challenge the church in additional ways. That will always be a huge piece of my heart, is how do we make the greater church live more into the calling that we have to be safe space and to equip and to support and to challenge people on their journey to live and to love and to lead like Jesus. So I do look forward to new things. I look forward to Rue watching you lead and watching you grow. And we are here to love you and to support you. And it is my greatest hope that those of you that are listening, who have been involved and engaged with the Connecting Grounds, will continue, and will find ways to use your voice and your passions in this new season, that you'll find ways to support Rue and to continue to love out loud in this community, because God knows we need it. So much need, so much hurt, so many gaps still to be filled. And so the work is far from done. And as an organization, TCG is far from done. But my time here is almost done. And I am very, very grateful for the time that I've had and the relationships that I have had a chance to build. So for those of you that are listening that I have not had a chance to talk to in person, just know that I love you and I'm grateful that journeys crossed and stories intertwined. And I am grateful for lessons that I got a chance to learn from you. And I do hope that our physical paths will cross again, so I get a chance to hug and love on many of you who have meant so much on this journey. So thank you guys very, very much. So, podcast will continue, and we will be here every week. So Flip Table is not something that we are stepping away from, that I am stepping away from. So we will be back next week with a really challenging conversation, but one that I am particularly really passionate about. So we'll be talking about religious trauma and triggers as it relates to loss and grief and memorial services and celebrations of life and funeral and all that comes in those spaces. So we'll be having one of our good friends who is a chaplain join us, also someone who has had some personal loss in her life recently. So I'm looking forward to recording that and sharing that conversation with you guys as well. Any last thoughts? All right. Okay. Well, we will be back again next week. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We will talk to you very soon.